Stand by. Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's IBM Tivoli Talk, Tivoli System Automation for Multi-Platforms Conference. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Joachim Schmalzery. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Mark. Now, my name is Joachim Schmalzried. I'm the technical evangelist for Tivoli System Automation, and with me is Enrico Jödecke from Development.
Hello, my name is Enrico Jödecke. As Joachim said, I'm from development and also change team for system automation for multi-platform.
Okay, so I'm actually very happy that Enrico is here because he's very, very knowledgeable about SA multi-platforms, and therefore I would like to encourage you to ask many, many questions because you really got an expert here and top answers. And now I hope you have downloaded our presentation. It is titled IBM Tivoli System Automation for Multi-Platforms, version 3.1, Overview and Details. And the intention is that this is a client presentation. Of course, it will be too long for a client presentation. Therefore, the recommendation is to have most of the overview charts covered. And then you can select from the details according your customer's configuration in terms of platform, application, or desired function, or level of previous knowledge. Yeah, so overview and details. Now let's proceed to the agenda. I would like to cover the business issue, and I have a couple of slides about high availability in general. Then we will have a quick review of the Tivoli System Automation family. And then I cover the overview and the summary. And I also will cover the business issues solved that cover some typical scenarios. And after that, Enrico will take over and cover the details. And not sure who covers the client success stories. Maybe that's me again. Okay. So I will switch over to client success stories at the end. Okay, proceeding to chart number three, titled Business Issues. We are in the high availability market. Yeah, so you only can sell the product certainly to a client who has a need for high availability. And in the chart, you can see at the top left the cost per hour for being down for some typical industries, and also the outage causes. And at the bottom, you see what it means or what it can mean for a business if you have an availability problem. You not only lose the immediate business, you can lose the customer because the competition is just a mouse click away. So challenges include on a little bit higher level that not only high availability is a must do, it's also what is also required is business continuity. For many industries, like insurances, banking especially, this is mandatory. So many clients have to have business continuity in place. And as you probably will know, high availability is the base for business continuity. Then, of course, business applications today are heterogeneous. They run on multiple platforms. So you have a complexity problem, and customers want to run identical automation on every platform. And also they would like to have one operations team that automate those cross-platform applications from one single technology. So again, client pressures is about availability, operations complexity, and when they have decided to implement automation, they want to implement it as fast and easy as possible. They want to avoid education and maintenance costs, and also they would like to be able to change their IT infrastructure rather fast. Yeah. Just recently I heard a case which goes back more than 10 years, but it's still valid. It's actually from the mainframe. I would like to share it with you. In the mainframe world, our main competition is CA, and one of our very big customers asked us, actually at that point it was not our customers, it was a CA customer, what IBM would offer and how much time we need to define the automation for an application, because what their system programmers told them, they needed something like 1 or 2 months to get support for a new application they wanted to automate. Yeah. And of course, IBM could show them that we can automate an application maybe in 15 minutes. Yeah. So they were really fully convinced about system automation, wanted to buy it, but then the system programmers actually stepped up and cut down from 1 or 2 months to just, I think, 1 or 2 weeks. Yeah. So they are not as good as IBM yet, but you can see what they are able to do under pressure. Okay, now on charts, actually this doesn't have a page number, but it should be chart number 4. You see how we measure availability, and we can measure it in number of nines, and you see the calculation, how long or how much downtime per year 5 nines of availability actually means, and this is only like 5 minutes. This is an area that we normally can reach only in the mainframe, but with our high availability technology in the SA multi-platform product, customers on Linux and AIX are actually able to approach the 4 nines availability as well. And behind that, by the way, if you click again, if you are in screen presentation mode, you see the downtime probability formula. And it is actually very easy. We can increase availability by introducing redundancy. Yeah. So if you have 2 servers, in that case with 90% availability, which is not very good, you can get up to 99% availability by just creating a cluster and by moving the application inside of this cluster. Yeah. So the recipe for high availability is introducing redundancy and doing a failover. And that downtime probability formula looks actually quite easily. So I think it's a good starting point. On the next chart, you can see that there is industries that measure the cost of outages not in dollars. They measure it in dead bodies. And for sure, when a patient is crashing, you don't want to hear that the system is down if the doctor asks for the patient's medication history. Now let's proceed to chart number 6. This is a nice chart that explains to you or to your clients how to increase availability in general. And the important news is this is not solved by just buying SA multi-platforms. I mean, it would be nice if it was, but matter of the fact is we are just an important piece of the chain. So if you click a button, you can see that at the top that we have a chain of resources and that the chain is only as strong as the weakest part of the chain. So you have to invest in every single area in highly available hardware, like spare processors, self-correcting memory, double backplanes, even the software like IBM Director has components or has functions that are important for high availability. And then you have to make sure that you can reach your application through the network, that your application can access the data. And all that is, of course, or could be a complex configuration, and by no means I can cover that just today I can only cover the aspects that our product has in that area, but because we have to automate the application, we also have to take care of network availability and also, for instance, accessibility of the data. So to some degree, our high availability product also has to deal with networking and storage. Now, even if you have invested in highly available hardware, there is still single points of failure due to non-redundant hardware system and application failures. And the solution to that, and also to any remaining hardware problems, is failing over that application to a backup system. Yeah, so you would create a cluster and then fail over your application to the backup system, and then you can use the probability formula of the previous page. The problem with that is dependencies to hardware software resources. You don't really want to code that. The solution to that would be a policy-based knowledge about application components and dependencies. But there's one more problem to solve, that would be the data integrity, because when you are introducing a backup system and you have the failover case, you have to make sure that only one system is accessing your database. Otherwise, if you are accessing your database from two systems, the database goes corrupt very quickly, and we call that data integrity for shared disks, or critical resource protection, by the way. And the solution to that is, of course, first finding out about any problems in the cluster. For that, we can use Heartbeat. If the cluster splits up, we have to come to a quorum. And then the survivor of the quorum, the winner of the quorum, has to make sure that any losers are really dead. And for that, they can use the Astonish function, or the loser could commit suicide, or make a disk reserve to make sure that the precious data is only accessed from one system. Okay, now that was the high availability in general. Let's proceed to page number 7, the SA family. And it all started with SA on the mainframe. And if you do that in screen animation mode, you see how we extended the SA family by GDPS, which is our geographically dispersed parallel sysplex, our leading disaster recovery solution. And if you click again, you see that we have ported our leading parallel sysplex cluster automation first to Linux and in a second step to AIX as well. And that became later on the system automation for multi-platforms product. Later on, we acquired Candle Corporation with two more products, mainly for the mainframe space, but that SA for integrated operations management, the formerly AF remote, is also able to do escalations and alerting and outboard automation, not only for mainframes, theoretically for Linux images as well. And if you click again, you see that we have split the world, if you wish, into first level and end-to-end automation, yeah, so SA multi-platforms originally covered both levels, because end-to-end automation back then was a priced SA multi-platforms feature. But since June this year, it was moved into a new product called System Automation Application Manager. And that product is now like an end-to-end automation server and can interface not only with the SA family, and if you click again, you see that there's also adapters available for non-SA or even non-IBM automation products like HACMP on AIX and even Veritas on Solaris and Microsoft Cluster Server. But keep in mind, those are now competitors because in the meantime, SA multi-platforms has been ported to all those platforms. And Enrico will cover that. SA now runs on Solaris natively, and also since last year it runs on Windows, several flavors of Windows. In the background, by the way, you see a screenshot of our graphical policy editor, in this case it's an end-to-end SAP application. And if you click one more time, you see the latest addition to the family, which is the Business Continuity Process Manager. That is a true IBM service manager. It's Maximo-based. It integrates with the configuration database, and it helps you managing disasters, testing also for disasters, and it integrates with GDPS, but it can be used without GDPS as well. If you watch closely, you see that GDPS overlaps not only with SAP Multi-Platform, but also with SAAM, with the latter one on the mainframe. And this is because there's special integration available, and we will cover that as we move on, at least for SAP Multi-Platform today. Now, chart number 8 shows you the product packaging change. It started with version 2 of SAP Multi-Platform. We had three releases. 2.3 was announced, I believe, summer last year, and it consisted of two components, base and end-to-end. And end-to-end was a prized feature. And with version 3.1, we unbundled that, and the formerly base component became just SAP Multi-Platform, and the XDR feature for Linux on System Z, which is one of the mentioned integrations with GDPS, which provides hyperswap capability for Linux on the mainframe, that became a priced feature. And the new product is Tivoli System Automation Application Manager. So that is what was known as the end-to-end automation component. It's a new and separate product. Okay, now that was the introduction. Now let's move over to chart number 10, titled IBM Tivoli System Automation for Multi-Platform, provides policy-based application and resource self-healing. So you've got an autonomic message here in the title as well. You can see the product structure. It consists of a cluster infrastructure named RSDT, Reliable Scalable Cluster Technology, has been ported over from AIX to Linux, and also in the meantime to other platforms. And System Automation Manager has been ported from our mainframe automation. Now, how the product actually works is that we do active monitoring to find out about outages, and customers would provide the monitoring script, and they also can define how often it runs. You would do it more often if it is a critical resource. And then the big difference is that we need no more scripts for all the logic and dependencies and components. This is all policy-driven. So we have very comprehensive knowledge about application components and relationships. And by the way, if you press page down, you see some more details. You see that the System Automation Manager knows about objects on different systems. You see grouping, you see dependencies, and that the Automation Manager works with the cluster infrastructure. The cluster infrastructure provides some resource abstraction, and it notifies the Automation Manager about status, and the manager comes to a decision what needs to be done in case of an outage, and delegate the actual execution to the cluster infrastructure, and there the resource managers, which specialize in specific resource classes like network processes, applications, or TCP/IP, would execute the recovery action. So what we get, we would either recover the application in place or move it over to another system of a cluster. And today we support Windows, Solaris, AIX, and Linux. By the way, there's a slightly more advanced chart of that available in my Business Continuity Sales Guide that I covered, I think, 2 weeks ago. That chart would also include some key features or key values of the product. Now, on page 11, you see that SAP Multi-Platform is almost everywhere. Towards the right, we have the mainframe with ZOS, and there we have, of course, System Automation for ZOS products. that covers that, including, by the way, Unix system services. And for Linux and system Z, we have SA multi-platforms. And by the way, we have special support for Linux on the mainframe. So we support the CVM and all the network connectivity that we have on CVM and also the virtualization there. In the middle, you have the classical Unix servers, AIX, and we also support, of course, Linux on Power. We have Solaris on Sun servers. Actually, the chart is outdated, yeah? So there should be a blue circle behind the Solaris. I apologize for that, because if you move down to the HBUX, we don't have any blue circle there, and that's correct, because that is right now our missing platform, so we do not run on HBUX yet. And on System I, we again support Linux. On the left-hand side, we have the PC systems. We run natively on Windows, and again, the blue circle is missing, so I picked up a real old chart. And on Linux, we run not only on PCs, including Intel and AMD CPUs, but we do not cover, by the way, the Itanium architecture. Also, it's only the IE32 architecture that we can cover. And also, we do the IBM Blade Center, of course. Oh, actually, there's some animation. Forgot about the animation. So if you press page down, you see that in 2.3 we added Windows, and in 3.1 we covered Solaris. So, okay, so the chart is actually good. Now, chart 12 shows you all the reasons behind policy-based automation. Why is policy-based automation good? And the main message is it reduces implementation time, coding, and support efforts. Now, how does it do that? First of all, you have to define the policy, and it includes information like what is the resource name, what are the scripts to start, stop, and monitor it, what are the preferred systems, any monitoring timeouts and intervals. And then you can group the resources together to enable operations at the business level. And also, you can define relationships to model your configuration. Why would you want to do that? Because you want to be able to start or stop your configuration in the right order. And also, if something fails, you want to do the right recovery action. Okay. Now, in this case, we have simple configuration like a web server, a virtual IP address, and a database. And we have two servers. And if you click page down, you see a script flying through. And that would be similar, or that would be something that a non-policy-based automation product has to do. Okay, I just hear that.
For the members of our telephone audience, we'd like to ask you to please stand by. We have lost our speaker's line. You should dial in just in a few moments. We ask that you please stand by and await our speaker. Thank you very much for your patience. And again, for the members of our telephone audience, we ask that you please stand by. We temporarily lost our connection for our speakers. They should be joining here in just one moment. We ask that you remain connected, and thank you very much for your patience.
want to download those policies, you can go to Opel. The link is at the bottom. And there you will find three packages for the main three platforms that we support. And the best support you will find for the Intel platform. Okay, proceeding to the next chart titled Summary of Key Tivoli System Automation Technologies. I think we learned that we have a manager agent design. What we didn't discuss yet is that this is a goal-driven automation and that the goal of system automation is to keep the system in line with business goals. And then we are able to group resources to reduce complexity, allow management at the business level, and relationships among resources and groups, by the way, help you defining resource constraints like two resources avoiding each other or attracting each other, and that helps you also to accelerate startup and shutdown and trigger the right recovery actions. No scripts and a lot of plug-and-play automation modules. Now, this chart is animated. If you press page down, you see a resource problem. This is picked up by the monitoring of the automation agent. Status is propagated to the manager. It is updating status, checking dependencies, and then it propagates votes down the dependency tree, and it delegates the execution of the recovery actions to the agent. And finally, the agent who has all the how-to would execute the command. Now, this is, by the way, true for system automation on the mainframe as well. Yeah? So we have the same concept. Click again and you find the operator who is able to define new goals or override system preferences. So an operator can enter new status requests. And finally, click again, the end-to-end automation manager is another manager, another brain. And that end-to-end automation manager also gets notified about status changes and can enter requests. And, of course, the operator can interface with the end-to-end automation manager as well. So that's a nice summary of our key technologies, and most of them are really IBM only, so they are all selling points. Next chart, titled Operation Console for the SA Product Family, shows you the Integrated Solutions Console. It's a web-based console, a single point of control, and it is used also by System Automation Application Manager and SAIOM, that was that alerting product that I mentioned on the family chart. The area is actually divided into the topology on the top left. You see either the end-to-end topology or the cluster topology. In this case, of course, it's the cluster topology because we are talking about base automation. And if you click either on the cluster or a system, you would get the resources that are running in it. In this case, we see the Apache resource that runs in the SAMP cluster. And if you click on one of those resources, you get details about the application, like who is the owner, what's the resource status, what are the relationships, and how to start and how to stop it. You would just click the start or stop button or request button, and then you can start or stop the application. In this case, we've got an error situation because we clicked on a node which is not available right now. So there's no request button. Now, the latest edition you can see on the next chart titled Policy Editor for the SA Family. And that is also integrated into the Integrated Solutions Console. Yeah, so you can get there from the ISV. It's also browser-based. And it can read your existing policy if it is in XML. And then you see the configuration. And you can do graphical editing. And also you can activate that application right from that interface. In addition, there is an integrated policy checker, and so it's much easier to have to understand how your configuration looks like, how the dependencies go, and it hides all the XML details from you. Enrico, anything you would like to add
nope.
to the policy editor? Okay. Now, proceeding to the next chart, titled What IBM Tivoli System Automation Can Do For You. First of all, it's about high availability. So we avoid downtime. We keep critical applications running. It does require clustering and redundancy. We can automate applications. We can reduce the workload for operators. We can reduce complexity. We can reduce skill requirements. Because we are shielding platform differences from the operator. Yeah? So if they use XML platforms to operate Solaris, it would be identical to Windows. Yeah? The classical, the browser-based user interface would be identical. And of course, the same is true for the end-to-end automation as well, even at a higher level. Yeah, but even at the base automation level, we have the same benefit, so we need less education for the operator, same for the automation team. They have one automation product across platforms, and there's a lot of advantages, including less required education, common automation concept for that. Very important, of course, is all the ease of use we have built in the product. Operators can operate at the business level. They are not required to remember components or relationships. They can change goals. We do not forget commands. So overall, we make it easier for the operator and also safer. And because we make it safer, we make it also more reliable. Okay, at the bottom you see what we provide: clustering, monitoring, integration into end-to-end automation, and policy-based automation. On the next chart, I really should add some page numbers, you see the more features, and this is something that Enrico will cover in more details. I mentioned in the beginning the thing about data protection and critical resource and so on, and this is something that is built in the product and has quite a few implications. So when we have critical resources present and you define what critical resources are, like a database, we can protect them by that quorum function that I mentioned. Yeah, so we find a surviving majority of systems, and if we have a so-called tie situation, we've got tiebreakers, so that we make sure that only one subcluster or only one system is accessing your critical resource. And that is something that not every competitive product has. Then we have the integration with end-to-end automation, and that gives you not only the common use interface and startup and recovery across platform boundaries, you also get reporting for all your base components. And in addition, what you get, and I don't think that's on that chart, is you can populate your Tivoli configuration and management database with all the resources you are automating. But for that, you need to buy System Automation Application Manager as well as for the reporting. Yeah? But it does integrate with our SA Multi-Platforms product. Yeah? But if you have both products, you get the reporting and also the population of the CCMDB. Policy management, there were quite some improvements over the releases, like incremental, non-disruptive policy activation. You can even manipulate the policy for online resources because there's a new log request. Template processing, you can use the same policy for different clusters and domains. Sounds like cloning for SA ZOS. Operator can move resources or exclude entire systems. We have VMware support, but no exploitation. And also we have a driver with a Tivoli Provisioning Manager. An example for that would be the IBM Dynamic Infrastructure. Now, why System Automation for Multi-Platforms? That's the title of the next chart. You want it for high availability, for lowering complexity, for resource relationships and grouping. It helps you creating very flexible clusters. So you are back, or you are actually free from defining those one-to-one clusters, like, you know, one backup system for every application. Now you can do an N2M kind of cluster where you have N production systems and M backup systems. Actually, a backup system can be even used for production. And as you move workload on it, you can define dependencies that moves other workload that is less important away. Then the next bullet is about automation requests, which are persistent. So that is goal-driven automation. And that's an IBM only. All other products are command-driven. I hope I'm right with that. But yeah, I think in that clarity, only IBM has goal-driven automation. Okay, and that is important because it makes life a lot easier for the operator. It helps avoiding errors. And again, commands would not be forgotten because you remember those goals. We can automate complex operations, reduce skill requirements. Because we are policy-based, we reduce implementation time, coding, and support effort. And benefits come also from the same automation and operational concepts that we use across the client's enterprise. And finally, the integration with end-to-end. Okay, now the next chart is titled Business Issues Solved. It's not IBM confidential. That's there by accident. So on the next chart titled Elimination of Unplanned Outage, you actually see a typical scenario. The problem is application service and downtime, and I don't want to take you through that again. But the solution is, of course, our monitoring and our policy-based automation. This chart is animated, so you can see even the different areas, how we cover technology failure by monitoring hardware network, how we cover application failures by doing application monitoring, and how do we take care of operator errors, if you click again, by offloading manual tasks from the operator by our goal-driven automation, by ease of use, by reduction of complexity. All that helps us reducing operator errors. Now, that was one scenario. On the next one, you see ease of use, lower time to value, and that is essentially the earlier chart that I had about policy-based automation, just a different chart created by Creighton Hicks, our former product manager, and again you see the animation getting rid of scripts. Then you will arrive at the next chart titled Reduce Hardware Needed Total Cost of Ownership, and that comes down to the flexible configuration that I mentioned. Yeah, so you are away from that traditional one-to-one. You can now do N-to-1 or N-to-M or N-to-N or whatever. Yeah, you have total flexibility. Now, why is that beneficial? It helps you reducing the number of required servers. So you can create high availability clusters with a small number of backup servers. So that's the benefit. And still you have an easier management and operations because you have fewer servers. And of course, it's about clean energy. You need a lot less energy. I think there is some animation. So here on that chart, we have a one-to-one. We have two applications. And for every application, we would need a backup system. So we need four total servers for two applications. And that, of course, is a waste. So if you click a button, you see how we do some failover for application 1 and application 2. And if you click again, we are introducing a 3-node server. We again have the same applications, and we have one backup system, and if application 1 fails, again, it's animated, so you have to click. It moves to node 3, but node 3 also can be the backup system for the application 2. So the total number of servers is actually only 3. That would be a N2M kind of configuration. And that can be implemented very easily with system automation. Okay, and you can even drive it one step further if you click again. Here we have only 2 systems, and normally the applications run on different systems, and by the way, this can be very easily accomplished through our location relationships, and Enrico will take you through that. So they would avoid each other normally, but if disaster strikes, if we lose the left-hand node, we can move over the application. And if the system is back, if you click again, we can move the application automatically back to the node 1, if you like. And also vice versa, if you click again, if node 2 fails, application 2 can be moved to node 1. Okay, so I'm done with my part, and I would like to ask Mark, our friendly operator, to open the lines for questions, please. Well, Mark is maybe not listening, but if you have questions, please press star 1, and then the operator.
Thank you very much. Again, as a reminder, that is star 1 if you'd like to ask a question on the telephone. If you are using a speakerphone, please ensure that your mute function is off so we can receive your signal. Currently, we have no questions in the queue, but I would like to remind the audience, star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. And we have no questions on the phone lines at this time.
Okay, so you hold your questions for Enrico. That is fine with me. And Enrico is now prepared and ready to cover all the exciting SAMALI platform details for you.
Thank you, Joachim. I will now cover the details. There's a long list in the agenda, so let's move on to the first slide, which is named Resource Types and Policy Elements. Joachim already talked about that system automation is a product which provides high availability and automation. And to do so, it needs to deal with all those applications and file systems and everything that is needed to make an application highly available or to automate it, to bring it online. Because usually an application is not just a process, but it's, if you think about SAP, this is a very complex application with many processes, many file systems, IP addresses, and all those need to be covered by system automation if we want to start it, automate it, and also keep it highly available. On the slide, you see our slogan, which is everything is a resource. So we say, if we look at the picture, there is a node, there are network adapters, there are also applications like DB2 or IP addresses, and all those is a resource for system automation. In fact, we have 2 types of resources. The first type is a so-called fixed resource. This is the resource which is only available at one particular node. For instance, a network adapter on node 1 is only available in that node, and there's no way for an automation product like system automation to bring those adapter to the other machine. The more interesting resources from a high availability point of view are the floating resources, which are in this example the service IP address or the DB2 or the mount point. A floating resource is a resource that can run on many nodes but only on one node at any given time. So in our example, the resources could either run on node 1 or on node 2. Another policy element is a resource group. And the resource group is used to collect all those resources that logically belong together. In our example, we have a resource group for the DB2 resources. And this resource group contains the DB2 resource, of course, then also mount point where the data, the DB2 data or databases are resided on, and an IP address resource which can be used by DB2 clients to connect to the node where the DB2 is running, because you do not know on what node the DB2 is actually running. You have to to check out, and with this service IP address, which is always on that node where the DB2 is running, you always find the node where the DB2 is up and running. Additionally, the resource group is our point of control, which means if you work with system automation, you do not start or stop individual resources usually, but you start or stop resource groups. By starting a resource group, system automation will bring all the resources in the resource group online. Similar, when stop of a resource group, all the resources are stopped, and you can also check on the resource group level whether the resource group is online or not, because the resource group also has an operational state which indicates, which is an aggregation of the status of the op state of the members. Additionally, since everything is a resource, also a resource group is a resource, and so resource groups can be nested, so a resource group can be put in a resource group to a certain level. Another policy element is an equivalency. This is typically used for network interfaces. With an equivalency, you specify what network adapters should be used to bring an IP address online on. If you have more than one network adapter, which is a good idea to have in high availability setups, then you can specify with an equivalency on what of the network adapters to use for the IP address. Another very important policy element are relationships. There are different types of relationships. First is simple start and stop relationships, like start after and stop after, and those relationships simply do what the name says. So if a resource has a start after relationship to another resource, then this resource is not started before the other resource is online. Then we have more complex relationships, especially the depends on relationship. This is a relationship which is comprised of four behaviors. The first is the start after behavior. The second is the stop after, but in the other direction. The third behavior is a collocation, which means if two resources have this relationship, then they are always started on the same node. And the fourth behavior of this depends on relationship is the force down by behavior, which means if the resource which resource is depending on is failing, then the resource is itself is stopped because it does not make sense to keep it running. So even all those behaviors are available as separate relationships, just using a depends on relationship already defines those four behaviors between two resources. Finally, we have relationship constraints. Placement constraints, sorry, where you can specify that resources should always run on the same node, which would be a collocated relationship, or always run on different nodes, which would be the anti-collocated relationship. If you do not want to have this a must, so in the sense of it should be run on the same node or it should be run on different nodes, then you can use the anti-affinity and affinity relationship. Okay, so those are the resource types and relationships and policy elements we use in system automation multi-platform. On the next slide, which is, by the way, animated, you see a simple example how you can define your setup. The example, we have two nodes, and the first step is, if you click page down, you see the three commands to create a high availability cluster, of system automation. First command prep RP node is used to exchange keys and allow the other node to perform operations on my node. So this has to be executed on all the nodes. The second and third command and all the other commands are only to be executed on any node and only one time. So the second command, mkrpdomain, makes a domain, creates a domain between the two nodes, which takes about 20 seconds or so. And this step already harvests the node names, the network adapters. It creates heartbeat rings for the cluster infrastructure. So all those stuff is done here. And with the third command, which is .rpdomain, the cluster is started and the heartbeat is set up, and we are ready to go. The next step too, if you click page down, is an example how you could define resources. In our example, it's a simple IP address called web IP and a resource for a web server. If you see here, you define a resource by telling system automation how the resource is started, stopped, and monitored. You can specify how often it should be monitored and how long it should take for the commands to run before they are considered hanging. You can specify what user to run the command and stuff like that. And in the node name list, you tell system automation on what nodes the resource can run. For service IP, this is easier. There's a special resource class, IBM Service IP. Since we know how to bring a resource, an IP address active, you do not need to specify how to start and stop it. You only specify what is the IP address which should be moved and netmarked, and also the node name list. Okay, this needs to be done for all the resources that comprise your application or environment. And finally, on step three, you see how the automation policy is defined. The first command, mkrg, creates the resource group. The second and third command, rgmbr, are used to put the resources which have been created in step two into the resource group. And finally, you can easily create the even complex depends on relationships with a single command, which is called mkrel, make relationship. Then you say what type of relationship you want to have, and then with the minus dash s, you say from what resource, with dash g, you specify to what resource the relationship exists. That's all. Okay. On the next slide, you see the same again if you're on the next slide, but now here is demonstrated how the plug-and-play automation module makes the work easier, because you do not want to issue the make resource command for all the applications, and therefore we have, as Joachim already pointed out, plug-and-play automation modules for various applications. It is animated, of course, so if you press page down, you see that you, of course, have to do the step one, defining and creating the cluster manually, but this is only three commands. It takes you 5 minutes at most, and you do it only once, independently how many applications you automate in your cluster. Okay, but step two, creating resources and policy, is now easier using the plug-and-play automation module. So if you proceed with the animation, you will see that there's a configuration file where you put in your variable information, like what is the name of your node, what is the IP address which should be used for failover, what interfaces you use, what are the file systems that you want to have high availability, and stuff like that. After you have filled in the configuration file, there's another script which is then executed, and this takes those information from the configuration file and creates the resources, resource groups, and relationships as we have specified, and this is also described as best practices. So it's using the plug-and-play automation modules is fairly easy to make your application highly available or automate your application. If you go to the next slide, you see some information about the plug-and-play automation modules. First of all, this is the list that Joachim has already shown. It's growing over time, so we are always adding additionally applications to this list. You can use it and start. You can see how what are best practices to make applications highly available, what are good examples to deal with various applications. It's no binary, it's just a script so far, so it can be read and understood. It can be adjusted if you have different resources which we do not know about. You can adjust them to customer needs. Of course, we have tested it, and everything is contained. So the resource definition file, the configuration file, and also a description is there. Those plug-and-play automation modules are for free. They can be found on the Opel website, Tivoli Open Process Automation Library. And so far we have one package for each operating system, so do not hesitate if there's only one Linux package or one AIX package. It's because we have one RPM or one install key for each operating system only. But all those plug-and-play modules are in. Now, if you do not have anything available, you may ask us whether we have something in plan in the next couple of months, or you can, of course, define your own policy. There's no magic, as you have seen two slides ago. You can easily create your resources and your policy. Okay. On the next slide, we have a more enhanced example for the SAP NQ Server Recovery Policy. Let me explain in a little bit more detail. The SAP application can be made more available by redundancy if you put more application servers in. Yeah, if you have two or three or five application servers, then you have redundancy on the application server side. However, there is one single point of failure here, or at least one, which is the NQ server, where all those database accesses or database logs are stored in. So if the NQ server is not available, you cannot work with the SAP. Okay, this needs to be made highly available. Additionally, the SAP has also provided an NQ replication server, which is running on another node and replicates all the information in the NQ server to the other node. Yeah? And if the NQ server fails and you are able to start the NQ server on the node where the replication server is running, then all those information is still available and users can work almost uninterrupted. It takes a couple of seconds and then everything is working just as before, so no interruption. Okay? And this has been defined models with system automation resources and the system automation policy. And on the top of the chart, you see the rules here. So first of all, this chart is animated. If you press page down, you see the first, there's a start sequence and some kind of collocation, which means that the NQ server, which is abbreviated ES, then the message server, which is abbreviated MS, and the IP are running on the same node. And then the SAP application servers are connecting through the IP to the NQ server and the message server. Okay? Another rule says, okay, the NQ replication server should start on another node than the NQ server. In our example, the NQ replication server is starting on the right side node. Then the NQ replication server replicates all the information from the NQ server and the SAP is running. Suddenly, if you press page down, you see the node where the NQ server had been running is crashing, and so the application server cannot work anymore. So the next task is to start the NQ server on the node, and all the other resources, of course, on the node where the NQ replication server runs. And this is guaranteed by the fourth rule, which says the NQ server runs collocated on the same node as the NQ replication server if this is already online. So this, if you follow the animation, this is working independent from whether you have two nodes, three nodes, or even 20 nodes. The NQ server will always find the node where the NQ replication server is running. Okay, then after this has been started on the correct node, the NQ server accesses the information from the replication server. The application servers can connect, and users can resume working even with just a short interruption. Finally, if the replication server data has been replicated, this is stopped by SAP, and then the NQ replication server is brought online on the, in this case, third remaining node. So this is very easy, or this is can be modeled easily with system automation policy element. Okay. On the next slide, you see more model of the policy which is used here. The name of the slide is Plug and Play Automation Module for SAP. You see on the right side there are some resource groups for the NFS server, SA NFS Server RG, and DB2 Lob RG. This, of course, is needed and is not covered in the SAP policy, but we have Plug and Play Automation Module for the NFS server, for DB2, of course, also for the other databases which can be used by SAP, which is Oracle and which is SubDB or MaxDB. On the left side, you see the resource group covering the NQ server resources, which are some more than the just the NQ server and the message server. And in the middle, at the top, you see the resource group for the NQ replication server group. Furthermore, in the middle, which is the purple bubble, there are the resource groups which are used to automate the SAP application servers. And, of course, you may also automate the SAP infrastructure resources like the SAP router. If you go on the next slide, which is titled SAMP is SAP's preferred HA solution, you can see that we have also an integration into the SAP installation media. So we have a very close system automation multi-platforms has a very close relationship to DB2. So if you buy DB2, the HA feature, then you already get system automation for multi-platforms and can use it. If you want to just to make DB2 highly available, you can use it for free. And we use this to also put system automation on the SAP software disks where the DB2 is already there and then also system automation. In the New York release, SAP NetWeaver 2007, we are even integrated in the SAP install routine. So within the SAP installer, you can check make system use system automation or TSA to make the DB2 highly available, and then the policy is set up, system automation is installed, and stuff like that. On the next slide, here's the DB2 story coming up. So as I already said, DB2 in, with the HA feature has included system automation for multi-platforms, which is since DB2 version 8.2. And you can use the system automation to make the DB2 highly available. This is true for normal DB2 instances, which are just start, where the instance is just started on another node, on a shared file system, but it's also true for DB2 HADR and for DB2 distributed partition feature. So all those is available. There's some animation which shows what is covered. If you press the page down button, you can see first the policy, which is in this example fairly simple. So if the DB2 fails, system automation will of course restart the DB2 in place. Second is, if the DB2 fails and cannot be restarted, then everything is stopped on node 1, and then all the resources are started on node 2. Okay. The third case is if the entire node fails, then all the resources are started on the other node, of course. The policy setup is easy. However, here is a different approach. The policy is not managed by system automation development, but it is developed and managed by the DB2 itself. So the policy is developed and shipped by DB2, and we are of course working together with DB2 that the best practices from an automation perspective are followed. So for DB2 there is a command which can be used, and there you specify your DB2 instance, your mount point, your IP address. With DB2 9.5 there is even a command DB2 HAICU, which can be used to create even the cluster and do all that stuff. So you do not even have to use system automation for multi-platform commands. On the next slide, which is titled Goal-Driven Automation, Keep System in Line with Business, you can see that we are the chart that Joachim already brought up in his section. You see there is the agents and the automation manager operators, and the point here is that we have a policy, and the policy has goals. Each resource group has an availability goal, which is either online or offline. If a resource group has the goal to be online, then system automation will start the resource group members and keep it online. If the goal is offline, system automation will keep the resources offline, which means if you start the resource manually, then system automation will detect it and bring it offline again. The policy also specifies preferred systems, so on what system a resource should be started on. Of course, those goals can be changed or overridden. So if you want to have a resource temporarily stopped for maintenance, then an operator can just specify a request to bring a resource down. Or if you have an end-to-end automation manager from system automation application manager product, can also override the goal which is defined here. As I said, this is done using requests, which can be start requests or stop requests. Or what also can be done, if you want to free a system for maintenance reasons, you can also exclude this system from automation, and then system automation will stop all resources running on this system and bring it online on other systems. And then the node can be stopped or can maintenance be performed on. All those requests are persistent, which means if you set it up, they are there, and you need to cancel them to get rid of. And there's a priority, so if there's a normal request from one source there, from one operator, or from end-to-end automation there, and you need to override it, you can specify a force priority and define a different goal. Yeah. This is an example of how operator errors can be reduced, because you use the automation software even for those maintenance tasks, and not commands which have to be input manually by the operator to bring a resource down. Okay. On the next slide, which is titled Data Protection by Quorum and Tiebreaker, you will see how we handle this critical resource. So if we, in this example, we have five nodes, and the problem to solve in a, in an environment where you have more than one node is what how to behave in case the nodes cannot talk to each other. Yeah, the worst case is all the nodes say, okay, I cannot talk to the other node, but a resource is not there, I started. If this approach would be followed, then it would end up in the worst case that the cluster is really split while the resource, the nodes are online, that resources would be online on more than one node at a time. And for file systems, that would be terrible because file system corruption would occur, or IP addresses, duplicate IP addresses in the network are to avoid. Okay. Therefore, we have a concept which is called quorum, which means a subcluster can only perform operation if more than half of the nodes are available. And in our case, if we have five nodes and the cluster is split in a two-node subdomain and a three-node subdomain, only the nodes in the three-node subdomain would allow to host and start resources or applications. The two-node domain would not be allowed. if we have a cluster out of an equal number of nodes, for example two, then this is of course a problem because the majority would mean that it's only working if both nodes are available. So there's some tie-breaking needed. This could be done by an operator which would specify on the command line what node would have quorum, but this is not automatic. So we also have automatically tiebreakers. The first one is a disk tiebreaker, which uses disk blocking to make sure that only one node gets the quorum and the other not. Alternatively, you can use a network tiebreaker, which uses another IP address, an outside IP address, and if we can ping this IP address, we assume that we have quorum. Now, if we have resources, so-called critical resources, which must never run on more than one node at any time, like file systems or IP addresses, running on the node, and we lose the quorum, then the node itself detects it and commits suicide. So it crashes by itself. There are different means that could be specified. Default is commit suicide and reboot, but you could also specify crash and halt or do nothing, but nothing is recommended for testing only. Okay. On the next slide, you see the operations console. Joachim already talked about there are different areas. On the left top side, you see the domain hierarchy. In this case, you have a system automation application manager domain here. On the left bottom, you see then the resources which are available on the selected system. And on the right side, you see more information about the selected resource. You also see on the right side the buttons, which are named requests offline. In this case, you could specify an offline request against the resource. This is what we talked about earlier. If an operator wants to temporarily stop a resource, it just has to press the button, and system automation would then stop the resource because of this operator request. And once it is finished, then the cancel request would be highlighted and the customer could cancel the request by just pressing this button. Okay. On the next slide, there's the XDR for systemd functionality. This is only available for Linux on the series. And there we have some additions to system automation for multi-platforms, where we can also include Linux running on this series either in an LPA or on VM in a GDPS managed a failover. So we can could or the Linux on this series could participate in so-called hyper-swap, where the disks are just in case of an error just failover to another site, and the Linux would not even notice it. Correct, Nahim?
Yeah, that's all correct. And if you want details about that, we have other Tivoli talks about business continuity, and even there's a special Tivoli talk that we did last year about that XDR function. I think it's a very cool function, and many customers ask for that because we see an increased number of customers asking or putting critical applications on Linux on System D. So this can be a pretty hot function, especially if the customer already has GDPS.
Thank you. Okay, on the next slide you see a customer example, which is Bundesrechenzentrum, I think, in Austria. I don't want to cover it here. As Joachim said, we have another presentation. So on the next slide is just what I want to talk. It's, we have changes here. Functionality, the XDR functionality is available since several years. I think we already had it with version 1.2 of system automation. And now with version 3.1, we have this, you need a special license for this. So if you want to use this functionality, this system automation 3.1, a new separate license is required. Okay, on the next slide, which is titled SAMP Windows Support, I just want to talk a little bit about what we have done there, because all the other platforms, which is Linux, AIX, and Solaris, are Unix platforms, have same look and feel and work similar, and what we have done for our Windows platform support, now we have ported the complete system automation, including the cluster infrastructure, to Windows. And so we have the same code base and we have the same look and feel. And if you ask how we could do that, because Windows is not a operating system where you work at the console, if you go on the next slide, there's a little architecture picture of the Windows Server 2003 at the bottom. You see there are many subsystems available on the Windows. And one of the subsystems is the POSIX subsystem, or it's also called SUA, Microsoft Subsystem for Unix-Based Applications. And what we did, we have ported system automation into this POSIX subsystem. So this chart is, again, animated. So if you press page down, you will see that system automation is running on the POSIX subsystem, but of course, you can control from our this POSIX subsystem other so-called Win32 applications, disks, or Windows services, network IP connections, and of course, you can control applications running in the POSIX or SUA subsystem. Now, on the next slide, there's also a little example for this. on the top, you see that we also use the class IBM application, as we did for the simple example with the Apache web server. And there you can specify whatever script you want to use for starting a resource and also a Windows service. We also have a utility called SAM service, which can be used to easily create a resource for a Windows service. So the command specified at the bottom, you see it's user sbinrct bin sem service is shipped with system automation, and you just specify the name of the Windows service, and then you can create a resource that manages the Windows service. Of course, this is not usually intended for managing the services on the node, but if you want to fail over a resource which is defined as service, then you need to have an cluster software or HA software, and therefore it's useful. On the next slide, there's an example how we do the critical resource protection on the Windows platform. On the Linux, on AIX, there's a kernel module available called SoftSock, but on the Windows there is not, and therefore we have created a device driver, IBM HADMS.sys, and this is creating a blue screen of death in case system automation detects that critical resources are running on the machine and the program is lost. You see, on the blue screen of death, you see something like 0x death, which indicates that the deadman switch or the critical resource protection has been raised by system automation. Okay, on the next slide, there are some bullets why system automation multi-platforms has more features than Microsoft Cluster Services. First is that, as I already said, we are also automating resources and monitoring them if the resource should be offline. With Microsoft Cluster Services, is not the case. If the resources are offline, you can then stop the resource and Microsoft Cluster Server would do nothing. System automation has the goal-driven behavior and therefore would keep the resource offline. Then system automation multi-platforms has critical resource protection, as already mentioned. System automation multi-platforms also has more relationship types. You can specify more sophisticated relationships and policies. Talking about the plug-and-play application automation modules, using Microsoft Cluster Services, you can only use supported application and not customer-owned. So system automation multi-platforms, it's very easy to modify the plug-and-play automation modules and also automate resources which are completely customer only. Now, we also do not have the requirement for the enterprise edition of the Windows server. We can also work with the standard server edition, so it's a question of money. And of course, as we already talked about in the previous slides, the goal-driven behavior and all those other advantages. Okay. The next slide, called Storage Resource Manager. Here we show that we also have a resource manager that deals with data, in this case with logical volumes, volume groups, and file systems. You can, of course, use the IBM application resource class to deal with volume groups, vary on the volume groups, or mount file systems, unmount file systems. But with the storage resource manager, this becomes more performant, and also it is easier because you do not have to take care about it. You just work on the file system level. All the others are harvested. Or if harvesting is not supported on a particular platform, then you can easily create user-controlled file systems, and then you just work with the resources in this file system class. So, as I said, with a storage resource manager, you do not need to care about how the mount and unmount of file systems is done. You just say start resource, and the resource manager performs all that stuff. On AIX, we also support LVM mirroring with the new version. So also here, you can create more complex environment. The next slide, which is titled Launch Tab Workspace from SA Operations Console, illustrates how we integrate with other Tivoli products. In this example, an operator is working on the System Automation Operations Console, and then he wants to look at a particular system which is where resources are running on. And then he can choose a link on the System Automation Operations Console to directly launch the tab workspace and also automatically in the corresponding ZOS system console. So it's tight integration where you just, with one click, can switch to the other Tivoli application and also have the focus on the right resource. The next slide is also an example of integration with another Tivoli product. System automation for multi-platforms does not only connect to the operations console, but you can also specify that events are to be sent to the Tivoli Enterprise console. And if then an operator watching the Tivoli Enterprise console finds such an event from a system automation resource, he can just launch in context the System Automation Operations Console, which then, of course, also has the correct resource selected. And then he can perform deep dive investigation on the System Automation Operations Console. Okay, the next slide covers some additions or enhancements regarding System Automation Multiplatforms 3.1. So first, which covers enhancements on Windows. Since version 3.1, we have also available the end-to-end automation adapter, which means that we now are able to include domains running on Windows into an end-to-end or System Automation Application Manager domain. The same is true for the operations console. So with this adapter, you can also see Windows domains on the operations console. And another feature which is important for the policy editor and also for policy management, you can save and also load policies in an XML format. And this has now been made available on the Windows platform too. The next slide, some enhancements regarding AIX or some information. First is that on AIX we are now supporting also AIX 6.1, and there is a different package for AIX shipped from System Automation for AIX 6.1 and AIX 5.3. And to distinguish between the System Automation package version, which belongs to AIX 6.1 or 5. something, we have introduced another modification level. So if you see version 3.1.0. something, then you have the version for AIX 5.3. If the version of System Automation is 3.1.5. something, then you have the version compiled for AIX 6.1. Another important enhancement is that we are now also shipping the RSCT, which we require with System Automation, and also installing it. We haven't done this before because the RSCT is also part of the AIX operating system, but we recognize that customers have difficulties downloading the required level of the RSCT. And to prevent customers from that task and all the problems that may arise with it, we already packaged the RSCT and also install the RSCT at the level that we are requiring for System Automation 3.1 to work. Next slide is covering the measurement and reporting. This is a feature which is available with the System Automation Application Manager, which is also available since a couple of months. And there is a reporting infrastructure, which means there's a database, and in this database you can put in events in case a resource is started or stopped or or failing. And with System Automation for Multi-Platforms, we also have now an enhancement or a new JDBC publisher, which can be configured to send those events to this reporting infrastructure of an SA application manager. And then you can use a report generator at the application manager and generate reports like how long does it take to start my application or my entire SAP application, what is the mean time for starting and stopping and stuff like that. So all this can be done there. And System Automation for Multi-Platform is prepared and can be plugged in this infrastructure, which is also available for the application manager, of course, and other System Automation family members. Okay, next slide is covering some bullets of more news. First of all, with version 3.1, we have Windows Server 2008 supported. Then we also support now VMware environments on all X-Series platforms. I've listed them there. The third bullet is interesting for AIX and Unix users. Before 3.1, we had a configuration utility which was graphics-based to configure the automation adapter, but it would require that there had to be installed some X server on the target machine, and this is not usual on AIX and Linux. And therefore, we now have a silent installation support, so you do not need to have an X server installed to get the automation configured on an AIX or Linux machine. And of course, we have some new pre-canned policies I've listed here, but as we already said, the list is growing over time. Just look frequently on Opal to see what's new there. Okay, Joachim, you may cover the references.
Yeah, thanks, Enrico. Quick word on the references. Of course, this is not confidential, but if you move to chart 54, you see the first group of references that you could use. However, I would like to advise you that you check with the reference owner whether this is still a safe reference to use, because you know, the relationship there, it could change with the client, there could be problems. And also, I would like to ask you if you know any more references, you know, like local case studies. Please send them to me. I would like to include them here. Or even better, if you have a customer who would be willing to become a system automation reference, please try to get your customer in the database. We have an increased focus on extending our reference clients, and you would get a lot of bonus points if you would get us new reference clients. As you can see in the list, most of our customers, or at least references, are in Germany, and mainly on system P, AIX, or Linux, but also on the mainframe. And the major applications are SAP and DB2. On the right-hand side, with the links, you see hot links into the reference database, to technical briefs, to a chart later on in the presentation, or to case studies or other or other pointers to public presentation. And if you move to chart 55, you get the second round of that. Now, there's even an updated version of this reference part of the presentation, because we have a new reference client in Italy, Colacium, also using or automating SAP on Linux on the mainframe together, by the way, with Tivoli Workload Scheduler. So enjoy the rest of the reference chance. With that, I would like to turn back to Mark and to ask you to come up with any questions for me or Enrico, please.
And to our telephone audience, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that is star 1 to ask a question. We have no questions at this time.
Okay, then I would like to thank everybody for attending this Tivoli Talk. If you have any further questions after the presentation or if you have listened to this Tivoli Talk and would like to ask a question, my email is on the very first slide, and I would be more than happy to answer your question. And thank you for attending today's Tivoli Talk. And with that, I would like to turn back to Mark.
Thank you very much, and that does conclude our conference.